Welcome. It's Thursday night and time for Psychic Viewpoint on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com. Spirituality, psychic development, love and relationships, manifesting prosperity, and more. You now have access to the world's most renowned spiritual teachers, healers, psychics, and mediums as you join us during this transpersonal collective experience. Sponsored by PsychicAccess.com, where all psychics have been interviewed, verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you the highest quality of quality service. And now, on with this week's show.
Good evening, my name's Steve Frempton, and you're listening to the Psychic Viewpoint, sponsored by PsychicAccess.com. In a moment, our guest Evans Bone will join us, and we'll be speaking about Toth. But before we get started, I'd like to welcome my co-hosts. How are you doing this evening, Carmen?
I am fine, thank you. I'm doing quite well for tonight. Quite cozy.
Good, good. So you're staying warm up there.
You know, we have in Canada, yeah. Now it's come to the climactic phase where you get used to being so cold that minus 10 seems quite balmy. I don't know what it is. It's a trick of the mind, you know what I mean? It truly is. Goodness. So toasty and nice, and I think it's because eventually it's coming. But it has been a rough winter. I hate talking about the weather, but really it's absolutely immensely strange lately, admittedly.
Well, would you like to tell our listeners a little about your work, Carmen?
Well, thank you. Yes. So I am your friendly local empath. Literally. And so what I can do is I'm just really helpful in being able to help people not feel alone, misunderstood. And really, essentially, you can do no wrong because I can intuit the heart of the matter. And so I'm a telepath and I also read cards.
Yeah. Thank you, Carmen. Wonderful. Well, I hope you enjoy the interview with Evans.
I'm looking forward to this. This is great because it's a topic we all need to really get into. Thank you.
Well, enjoy. And Stephen, how are you?
I am excited about tonight's topic, Steve.
Good, good.
Well, I've been waiting for this.
Yeah, I'm very interested in Toth, also known as Hermes, obviously. Well, Stephen, would you like to tell our listeners about your work?
Yes, thank you. I am a tarot reader and an astrologer. I practice medieval astrology. And at psychicaccess.com, you can find all of us there, and we all specialize in a variety of things. I like to dwell in relationship matters and other, like, self-improvement campaigns, and career matters also interest me a great deal, and I have a special talent in assessing those.
Great. Well, it's good to have you with us as always, Stephen.
Thank you.
Well, let me tell you a little bit about Evans. She's a fascinating lady. In the 20 years that she's been actively involved in the consciousness movement, Evans has been able to study with many wonderful teachers. She studied tarot and mediumship, as well as mastery with Rachel Selly, Egyptian mythology, theosophy, channeling and sacred sites with Paige Bryant, Native American shamanism with Peter Calhoun, and even Peruvian shamanism with Amaru Lee, not to mention Egyptology and astrology with Mary Lamando. And in the last 10 years, Evans has hosted internationally recognized teachers, shamans, and intuitives, as she also organizes small group educational visits to sacred sites. And her website is theperpetualpilgrim.com. And there's lots of wonderful information on there. It's a site that I follow. So do check out the site, theperpetualpilgrim.com, and sign up for Evans' blogs and newsletters. Well, Evans, welcome to the show.
Well, good to be here with you, Stephen.
Wonderful. It's great to have you back again. It's been about 18 months, I think, hasn't it?
Yes, about a year and a half.
Absolutely. Well, time flies. Well, it's wonderful to have you here again, and I'm so excited that we're going to speak about Toth. And I was debating with somebody how to pronounce the name, because I think some people say Toth and others say Toth. How do you pronounce the name?
I have always said Toth. And tough. I think the others are correct, but if you go to Egypt and you talk to the Egyptians and you talk to the head of the antiquities, they say Toth. So that's good enough for me.
It sounds really authoritative, doesn't it? Toth.
Yes.
Stand
yes.
up and be... Prepare yourself, Toth. Well, Evans, Toth has other names, doesn't he? So can I start by asking you to tell us about Toth's other names and his origin?
Oh, I'll be happy to. His actually most ancient name is Tahuti. So every once in a while you'll see that name, Tahuti. But we know him in his Egyptian form as Toth. And sometimes he's even referred to as Toth the Atlantean. So that kind of suggests that his incarnations go way back before our written time to Atlantis. And the version we call Toth is he was before the gods. They say he was born out of the primal waters. And so he was actually already in Egypt because he brought the written language to Egypt. He was already in Egypt. But we also know him as several other really important names. One is Hermes Trismegistus, or the thrice great Hermes, which is his Greek form. And in his Greek form, we know him very much as the great alchemist. And you will hear people refer to Hermetic texts or Hermeticism. And we'll talk a little bit more about Hermeticism later. And then he's also the winged god Mercury, the Roman version with the wings on his shoes. And as that is the Mercury, he is the messenger of the gods. He has a counterpart in Egyptian mythology, which is the goddess Maat, who is truth and justice. And then his consort, or what we might call wife, is Seshet. And she is also a goddess of learning, and she's a star goddess.
And when we think that Toth did incarnate in many different forms at different times, do you feel that's correct? Is that your understanding?
Yes. And you can also look at it as Toth is an energy, and as our times changed and as our cultures changed, you know, he had these incarnations. To the Egyptians, Toth was a man with the head of the ibis bird, and that spoke to the ancient Egyptians, who probably came out of a more shamanistic culture that was their the written word, and so they would have identified him as the bird man. And then as he came in toward the Greeks, he became a male figure. We see Hermes as just a man. So that's why he has different kind of incarnations. And a lesser known incarnation is as the biblical character Enoch. That's also considered a Toth incarnation.
Ah, how interesting, because we had a radio show a few weeks ago in which we mentioned Enoch, the Book of Enoch.
Right.
We were told that there were actually many books of Enoch, but only several were saved at the time of the Great Flood. So as Enoch was apparently the person that brought metaphysical knowledge, that carried incredible metaphysical knowledge, does that seem correct given what we know about Toth?
Yes, because from my understanding and the readings and studying I've done, Enoch was also called the Great Initiator, and he was believed to have initiated Moses and Solomon, two of, you know, the people in our history we consider some of the wisest men, into the Hermetic knowledge. And they were, so Solomon and Moses were Hermetic adepts. So he played that role during the biblical times.
And so you mentioned Hermeticism.
Yes.
Is he because of the name Hermes, responsible for Hermeticism.
Yes, because all the, well, let's talk some of his roles, some of the original information, or what Thoth brought to the world was wisdom and knowledge and writing, medicine, math, geometry in particular, and law. So Thoth was the originator of all the written word, and he brought with him the wisdom, what I consider the wisdom of the stars, with him and wrote them down. So he had the original knowledge of the stars and what we were here on this earth to do. And that then transformed through the ages, because the Greeks had so much influence and used the word hermetics instead of going back to the word Thoth. So we have some of the major works that we know of are the Emerald Tablets, the Hermetica, and the Egyptian Book of the Dead. All of those are attributed to Hermes and Thoth.
And what about the tarot cards, Evans?
Well,
because
I
read one of the theories about
the tarot deck is the Book of Thoth also. And it's the Book of Thoth in pictorial form, because symbolism goes into our psyche or our unconscious much easier. And I was just reading, someone called the tarot the unbound book of Hermes, and I very much agree with that. And I feel that Thoth is the great author of the tarot.
You do?
Yes, absolutely.
So when we're working with tarot, and in my view, astrology, we are working with Thoth and the knowledge of Thoth.
Absolutely. Because if you know much about or study tarot, the major cards are the soul's journey through life. And that's the kind of our whole lifetimes, and that's kind of the whole point of our incarnation, is to learn the lessons. And the tarot lays out the lessons everyone must go through in order to reach the enlightenment, which is the world card, completion. And then we start the cycle all over again. And that's kind of the whole point of the information that Thoth brought to the world.
And so what do you feel Thoth represents for us nowadays in the 21st century? The same
things? I think he does much for us. First of all, the Hermetica, the Emerald Tablets and the Hermetica have majorly influenced Western civilization. Western civilization, I'm not talking about the East, the Asia, the Buddhism and the Vedic. I'm talking about the Western, what we call the Western mystery tradition, which came out of Egypt and branched off into Islam, Christianity, and Judaism. All of that is influenced by Hermes and Hermetica. And the great literature of our Western culture is Hermetic. Our great authors were influenced by the Hermetica. Sir Walter Scott even translated the Hermetica. The Hermetica, and we know our founding fathers were greatly influenced by the Hermetica. We see it in the symbols of the United States. We see it in the doctrine of our Constitution. And so we can directly, we can even say that the Hermeticism is the cornerstone of our Western culture.
And how best do you feel we can learn about Thoth? Which sources do you recommend?
Oh, I have quite a few sources that I really recommend. One is an old classic called The Secret Teachings of All Ages by Manly P. Hall. That one's been around a long time, but it's an excellent way to tap into the wisdom of Thoth and going back into looking at the influences throughout history that were not necessarily well known, but were there underground. what happened was the Greeks took, when they took over Egypt 2,000 years ago, burning the Alexandria Library, tried to wipe out this knowledge of Thoth and Hermes, but some of the books were saved and were kept in secret schools. So much of the knowledge was underground, and it's just now that it can come out. But if you want to go directly to reading Toth's work, there is you can buy many versions of the Hermetica. You can buy versions of the Emerald Tablet. You can buy the Egyptian Book of the Dead. I particularly like a version called Awakening Osiris. And then another very good explanation of the Emerald Tablets is one called The Emerald Tablets, Alchemy for Personal Transformation by Dennis Hawk. I highly recommend that book.
And was this information, these writings, were they channeled by individuals from Thoth, or did Thoth actually write them himself? Or do we even know?
That's a little bit of a mystery, but I believe, you know, the original works of the Books of the Dead and the Emerald Tablets, I believe those were written by Thoth. And then I think modern day literature that talks about Hermes and Thoth, I like to think of it as tapping into that stream of energy. There's an energy stream that holds that ancient knowledge in the Akashic records, and we give it a face. We call it Thoth, but it is a stream. And I think when we obviously the great writers, even Shakespeare, tapped into those streams of knowledge, and I truly believe, I have no evidence of it, but I truly believe that Thomas Jefferson was really tapping into that stream of Thoth when he wrote the Declaration of Independence. And the evidence to me was the fact that he wrote it so quickly. It kind of came to him as a whole. To me, that's tapping into that knowledge.
So we could, in effect, meditate on the energy of Thoth and potentially learn in meditation.
Oh, absolutely. And get some more of those information. There's a couple other really modern influences of people that I really see as being influenced by Thoth. And one is a Cherokee Indian that was from my part of the country in East Tennessee, and his name was Sequoia. And you see pictures of Sequoia. He holds a tablet. He has a turban on his head. And Sequoia was the first person to come up with an alphabet in thousands of years. He came up with the Cherokee alphabet. And when he was doing the final work on it, he said that the sounds of the birds told him how to write the sounds of the alphabet. And that, you know, that's Thoth. And he was so accurate in this alphabet that the entire Cherokee Nation became literate within months. Now that's Thoth at work. That is tapping into that stream of knowledge in a modern day.
I remember once, Evans, when I was a kid, my mother, in the UK, we used to hang the washing, the clothes to dry outside in the summer and the spring. And I remember my mother always used to do that early in the morning before we all went out, before I went to school. And I remember she came into the kitchen from the garden one day and said, I was putting out the clothes and a bird spoke to me. Mm-hmm. And I said to her, what? And she said, seriously, there was a bird that landed near the washing line and it spoke to me. It had a voice. It spoke to me. And still to this day, when I ask her about that, she says, it did.
Yes.
And my mother's not a crazy character. She's quite a conservative, logical person. You know, she's not somebody that just believes anything that she's told. Mm-hmm. And certainly she's quite skeptical when it comes to metaphysics. But she insists that this bird spoke to her.
Yeah, and I very much believe that the birds are the messengers, like Mercury. They're the messengers of the gods. They have wings, and But when I read that at Sequoia's museum, I thought, boy, was he tapping into that universal knowledge. And then I wanted to tell you another really modern instance where I really see Toth's influence, and that's in the Harry Potter books. My kids happen to be the whole Harry Potter age, and when you hear the story that J.K. Rowling says, it came to her as almost a complete story that she wrote down, and then she developed it from then. But Toth is the god of magic. And how better to change and remember the magic and to bring magic back into our consciousness after being wiped out for hundreds of years since the Inquisition than to bring it back into children's literature. And to me, the Harry Potter stories are the work of Toth, re-reminding the children, sending a whole generation into the magic and the mysteries of our world. And Toth could not have gotten that to the adults. He worked it through the children through a story. So I personally think that the Harry Potter stories are the training manual for these new star children, the indigo children, and it's the work of Toth.
I do agree with you on that. I think that that those works are incredible and really are teaching kids and adults to mm-hmm. open their minds to what's yes. possible, what's available to us.
And, Harry is initiated. He through his experiences, he becomes an initiated human.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Evans, I know that you've spent quite some time in Egypt. Could you tell us a little bit about any monuments or sites in Egypt that are dedicated to Toth or that seem to carry the energy of Toth?
Well, Toth permeates every aspect of Egypt. There's not so many statues of Toth, but after my first trip to Egypt, I realized that Toth was becoming prominent in my life. And so the second time I went back to Egypt, I really looked for him everywhere I could. And so I found him on the walls of the temples every time I could, and you see him initiating people. He's pouring the living waters over them. And in the temple of Edfu, the Edfu text, those are the works, the wisdom of Toth. In the Temple of Karnak, it was one of my favorite because the upper part of Toth it still has its original colors. And that to me is beautiful to see a bit of what the glory of Egypt was. But one of my favorite pictures of Toth is in Abydos. And there's a picture of Toth holding the original Caduceus. And I wrote a blog post just for this show with pictures, with those pictures, the pictures of Toth in Karnak and the pictures of him in Abydos, so people could see, you know, what he looked like in Egypt.
And what did he look like? I know you mentioned, you mentioned Hermes and the wings. You mentioned the head of the head of the ibis.
Ibis. Mm-hmm. Yes, Toth in his Egyptian form is a man with a bird head, and the ibis is a bird that has a very long, thin, curved beak, very thin. And he's shown that way. There's from my thinking, one of the reasons he's shown as an ibis bird is because that thin beak almost looks like a stylus, like you could write with it. But it also reminds you of the crescent moon. And Thoth is a lunar god. He is a mediator between the earth and stars, between God and man. So on his head, he has the lunar crown. And you also see him holding a tablet in the stylus or pen so that he is ready to take down all the information to write. He is ready, and that's what I was saying in the pictures of Sequoia. He's holding a tablet ready to write, and it just so reminds me of Thoth. Every once in a while, you'll see Thoth represented as a baboon, but almost always you will see him as an ibis.
Now, you mentioned Sekhmet as well, Evans. Can you tell us a little about Sekhmet?
Well, Sekhmet, well, Shashat is his consort, but Sekhmet is one of the other great goddesses of Egypt, and she is a lion-headed goddess, and this is also part of that kind of shamanic taking on the look of the animal to help portray. She is the protector goddess that when the people of Earth were acting up, the sun god Ra sent her down to get everyone back in line, but she kind of got a little out of control till they fed her some wine and got her to calm down. But she is the fierce protectress of Egypt and the lion-headed, and she is there when we need help and protection.
So we can call upon her for protection.
Absolutely.
As
protection,
we could call
yes.
upon Thoth for knowledge or hermetic education.
Correct. Thoth has another very important role in Egypt that I really wanted to make sure we talked about, and that is in the Egyptian Book of the Dead, which is their scrolls that they used to put in the sarcophaguses when people died. And it was like a map. It was the instruction manual on how to get through the underworld, which the Egyptians called the Duat. And in those manuscripts, there's a picture of Thoth, and he oversees the Egyptian version of the Judgment Day, which they call the Weighing of the Souls. And after someone dies, the heart is taken and weighed on a scale by Ma'at, the goddess of justice. And Thoth looks and checks to see if during that person's lifetime they had done the work they needed to do. And if they had lived a true life, done the good things that they needed to do, and stayed in alignment with the gods and the principles of the religion, then their heart was light as a feather. And so Thoth would notice this. They could move on to the stars if their heart was light as a feather. So you see Thoth overlooking this judgment, writing it down in the Akashic records. And if their heart was not as light as a feather, they got to go back and do it all over again. So it was very important to the ancient Egyptians to live a good life.
So that they didn't have to come back.
So they didn't have to come back, yes. and the principles that they were to be taking on, being kind, being just, being loving, if you go back to the Book of the Dead, those are the same principles that we were then given by Moses as the Ten Commandments. Very similar wording. So these things come down to us through our history, through our Western culture.
It's interesting that so many of the tales we tell, fairy tales and the legends, they seem to carry a lot of truth.
They are the truth. They are the way the subconscious can absorb the stories that we need to go. They go deep into the subconscious rather than just kind of sitting on the surface. And as a child, I was not allowed to read fairy tales because we were a very conservative Christian family and fairy tales were a lie. And how much I missed from not reading the mythology, not reading the fairy tales, because those inform our brain and subconscious about the bigger stories, the bigger patterns of why we are on Earth, not the small, narrow, materialistic version of life that our mass media and our more rigid religions show us. So these mythologies.
Do you feel that people generally know enough about these ancients, and that there's value in sharing much more information about, for example, Thoth and these different entities and energies?
You know, the medieval church, which just controlled every aspect of life, removed a lot of this from our lives. The Greeks destroyed the library. The Christian church clamped down on any kind of secret knowledge, underground knowledge that the Hermetica held, because that allowed them to have more control. If you believe in these secret stories of Hermes and Thoth, then they don't have as much control of you. So what was done to the population was taught that there's only this outer world. There was no inner world. And through the stories of mythology, through the understanding of the gods, it helps you almost make a bridge between the outer worlds and inner worlds. And when you read this mythology and you talk to the gods, you are bridging this inner life.
And we seem to be increasingly disconnected from the inner world, the inner life.
Yes. There was always threads. There was always little pockets that kept that inner life going. And, you know, we see them in the saints. The saints knew that. And we feel more comfortable in our modern life talking to saints, talking to great deities. But we can also tap into the stories and the energies of these ancient Egyptians, God, and realize that our true knowledge is from Egypt. That is ground zero in our Western culture. And if we can go back and embrace that, the Egyptians knew things that we don't know. We still don't know how they built the pyramids. We still don't know how their ceremonies were. And we, by going back and studying and remembering, reconnecting with the source of our original knowledge, we can regain that power that was taken from us during the Middle Ages and by the Greeks when they came to wipe out Egypt to overtake it.
Well, Evans, in a moment we're going to take a break, but a commercial break just for a moment. But I want to ask you before that, I've been reading that the pyramids are far older, or the Sphinx, let's take the example of the Sphinx. The Sphinx is apparently far older than archaeologists acknowledge.
Oh, definitely.
And so how old do you think the Sphinx is, and why are people resisting the truth about its age?
Well, I believe there's evidence that the Sphinx and the pyramids are more like 10,000 years old. The Sphinx is a lion originally, and that reflects the age of Leo. So we're talking 10, 12,000 years ago. And we don't know how the pyramids are built. They have all these theories, but we really don't know. When you go and you stand in those places, we do not to this day have the technology to build the pyramids. So how could some people who had ropes and pulleys possibly make those? And what was the second part of your question there?
Why people might be resisting
Well, that's because the last several hundred years, and through literalism of our stories in Christianity and Islam, we believe that the world, those religions say that the world is only 6,000 to 7,000 years old.
Okay.
So, and that's so important to them that they cannot believe that there's something outside of that. Egyptology in Egypt is controlled by Islam, and so things must fit in with their worldview. You cannot be an Egyptologist teaching in the temples if you are not an Egyptian.
Because if we acknowledge the truth, we'd have to rewrite the history books.
Yes, and you wipe out everyone's religion. You have to totally redo your world cosmology, and that's a big task. You wipe out what people know. You wipe out their security. So those of people who want to look ahead can see that, you know, these things aren't what we say they are. But one of the other great things in our culture right now is Ancient Aliens. That show is asking the questions. It's bringing up. It's saying to people, it may not be aliens, but we don't know how these things were built. This is a bigger mystery than we know. And so
excellent.
I appreciate Ancient Aliens for asking the questions.
I'm going to ask you more about Ancient Evans after Ancient Evans. Ancient Aliens Evans after the break, yeah. Because that's a show that I've been enjoying as well. So we'll be back just in a moment.
Okay, thank you.
A new era in psychic services has begun. PsychicAccess.com. You can connect with our psychic advisors by telephone or chat 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All of our psychic advisors are interviewed, fully verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you quality service. We're living in some very troubled times right now. More and more, the world's problems are affecting us on a personal level. You don't have to deal with this alone. Our highly accurate psychics, caring advisors, and talented mediums can help with situations you are currently experiencing and can let you know what the future may hold for you. All new customers get a free 6-minute reading. All you have to do is register. Why not visit us now and get a free reading at psychicaccess.com.
Well, Evans, welcome back. I want to ask you more about Ancient Aliens. And I know that in Ancient Aliens, they speak not only of Egypt, but other pyramids, other ancient monuments, whether they're in Peru or even in Turkey, I was reading. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit more about other locations in the world that seem to be as magical and mystical as Egypt, and maybe places where Thoth may have appeared in other forms? You mentioned Greece and Rome.
Well, he does have other forms. In Native American culture, he is known as Kokopelli, the trickster. I can personally speak, there is a very direct link between Egypt and Peru. And when you go to Peru, there's so many things that look like Egypt. And I was in Peru 2 years ago. And when you go there and you stand particularly in this one sacred site, Ollantaytambo, you look at those monuments, and they're just incredible. They're so big. There's no way we know how to get these up the hill to be where they are. In another place called Sacsayhuaman, my husband, who's 6'5" and a big football player-sized man, is absolutely dwarfed by the size of these stones that are perfectly fitted. So there are some mysteries there of how these monuments are and why they're there. And when I was in Peru, I picked up a book talking about Sacsayhuaman's connection with Atlantis and how they believe that those monuments were built. I've also had quite a bit of gone to England several times and have gotten to stand in the middle of Stonehenge And those sarsen stones are enormous. There's just no way that we know exactly how they were done. And the ancients just knew something we still haven't figured out.
I read that the only way they could have lifted those stones would have been levitation.
Yes, I believe so. And we have that kind of a place here in America at Coral Castle, where they don't know how this man built Coral Castle in Florida. And they believe that he knew the secrets of levitation.
Well, it would be wonderful to know, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I was levitated once by spirit in the morning. I woke up in the morning and I felt a presence, and then my body lifted from the bed. And it happened to my cousin as well in the same room, a different time. But it would be good to know how to actually levitate things. If we had that secret, we'd be able to make some wonderful things happen in the world.
Isn't that true?
Imagine just
that
being able to levitate
the Eastern yoga,
an aggressor out of position.
Levitate.
Sorry, Evans?
Some of the Eastern yogis know how to levitate, and the great Saint Teresa of Avila levitated, and her nuns had to kind of tackle her and hold her to the ground. So people that get into those high altered states have learned how to manage that. But it would be nice if it was a little more universal.
I always find it interesting that we tend to presume we're moving forwards, that we're improving, our knowledge is getting better, but we don't generally stop to think, well, actually, maybe there's a cycle and we've lost a huge amount of information. I remember being told once that when we experience these mini ice ages, the humans are not as intellectual because the sun and the warmth of the sun is critical to intellectual development.
Yes. Well, and you look at Egypt. This is the big mystery of Egypt, is how did it start high and go low? They forgot. They came in as a fully formed society, and then they crumbled until ended up in chaos and the whole knowledge was lost. The Egyptians and the Greeks knew how big the world was. They had figured that out. And by the time we got to the Middle Ages, people thought the world was flat. Now, how does that happen? How do we forget that knowledge? And, you know, we've only known the world was round for 500 years again. That's pretty astonishing.
It would be wonderful to just travel back in time and have access to all of this information that was lost. And
I think that's what we're trying to do when we tap into the energy of Thoth. We're opening those ancient books again. We're saying we want to know. We can enter a relationship with this stream of knowledge and say, I want to know more. And we can read the books. We've got the Hermetica. We've got the tarot, we have the Emerald Tablets. They're not always the most easy thing to read, but if we really want to know, we can re-enter those streams. And that's
it would be wonderful to do that. Do you think, Evans, that some of the people in positions of influence in our world are aware of these things?
Oh, I think they are, not necessarily calling them Thoth, not necessarily, because that's not the most socially acceptable in our Western Christian culture to say you talk to an ancient Egyptian god. But I think they're very, very much aware of it. And one of the things I really wanted to talk about how to bring Thoth into our modern everyday life, is Thoth was the developer of words and language. And he was a magician, and he knew the power of language. And this is how we can also bring Thoth into our lives, is understanding the power of the written and spoken word, and, you know, have him influence our communication, because we know that words can heal, and they can also do enormous damage. And as I was thinking about enlightened words and enlightened conversation, which would bring you into the stream of knowledge of Thoth, I was thinking about Martin Luther King and Gandhi. Those men changed the world with their enlightened talk, with their words, with their speeches. And instead of going to war, through their language, they were able to change the world. So I believe those are modern-day people who are using this magic of the words of Thoth to change the world.
I often wonder, Evans, if the sounds that we hear in the media, or the tones that exist in our languages, or that may have been eliminated from our languages, somehow influence us. Maybe they keep us passive. Maybe they keep us disconnected. Maybe they don't.
Well, it's interesting that you should bring that up, because this is a study that has just come to the forefront, in that I was raised as a musician, and our tuning note in the world, in the modern day world, we tune to A, which is the vibration of 440. That's the hertz that we tune to. Well, I've known this for a while, but I didn't quite understand it. The actual original tuning of our musical instruments was not to 440, but to 432. And you can go online and Google 432, and especially on YouTube, and so much information comes out that that's actually the proper tuning in order to come in harmony with our world. But we listen to music at 440, which causes us to be ever so slightly out of tune. And there's a very interesting, this also came up in my studies, the tuning was changed officially during the 1930s, which was the rise of the Third Reich, and it was changed in Europe. So during that period of time, they caused all of us in our bodies and our music to be ever so out of whack with the vibrations of nature. And it's very worthwhile looking at some of the YouTubes about the tuning of 432. This is some new information that's coming up right now.
How interesting. Do you know much about ancient Egypt and music in ancient Egypt?
I can't say I know a lot about it. There were a great deal of songs, and Hathor, the cow-headed goddess, used a sistrum, which is like a rattle. And she was the goddess of music, and music was really important to the Egyptians. But the Egyptians taught very much about the power of the word, which they call Heka, which is the magical words. And they had a magical name, which they called Ren. And these things brought power, and you used them carefully to pull the power of magic in the gods. So, and the hieroglyphs have so many meanings. Each hieroglyph has multiple meanings, and they are whole thoughts in those hieroglyphs. They're not just individual words. So they saw words and writing very different from us. They tapped into the subconscious with these symbols versus us using letters that we've learned to read, but are not symbols that go deep into our unconscious.
Do you think that different languages provide access to different states of consciousness, or different memories, different connections to spirit?
Oh, I definitely do. I think different languages develop people in different ways. And I think the languages, what's the best way you can say it? When you read about languages, they develop the brain very specifically, and by the use and emphasis of certain words and certain concepts, then you will hear that certain languages don't have major concepts that other languages do. And so we now sometimes borrow words from another language because we don't have that concept in our vocabulary. And I read an article in China, the place where dyslexia is in the brain of Chinese people is in a totally different place than dyslexia in English speakers. And I find that fascinating. You would think it would be in the same part, but it's not.
But it's always fascinating to listen to you, Evans.
Thank you.
I'm not sure if we're having a bit of an audio problem, but in any event, I wanted to ask how they would actually worship this deity physically. Did they give him any offerings?
I'm not sure that Thoth was so much worshipped. He was the intermediary between the gods. So the gods that would be part of, they would have different sets of gods, like they had the Memphis Triad, where they had Ptah and Sekhmet and Nefertum, or Osiris and Isis. Those would have been the gods that would have been worshipped in the temples, but not so much Thoth. He was more of the god that they would see as the writing god, the scribe. So they wouldn't necessarily be worshipping the scribe.
So we were just discussing Mercury. So he was the intermediary, very important, but a neutral figure in essence.
Yes, yes. He was the messenger of the gods, and that's why he had the wings. And in Mercury's hand, you will see him often holding the caduceus, which we now use as the medical symbol. But that is Mercury's symbol. And it's got the wings on the top, but that is Thoth's symbol. And the caduceus is a very important part of how we recognize Thoth, because it is his symbol of learning the enlightenment. The snakes going up the caduceus is like the Kundalini energy coming up to the wings, which take us to the higher realms. And the caduceus also kind of shows us in our modern understanding the DNA that's in our very being. So the symbols of being the same of Mercury and Thoth are very interesting and really tell us the roles that they're playing in our lives.
Yeah, and this is actually sort of, I didn't know in the Greek structure, and maybe Stephen could cue me in on this as well, was that there were maybe these lesser gods, intermediaries, that were actually very revered and important, would be supportive gods to deities? Is that correct?
Yes,
Evan?
Yes, that's what
Thoth
was.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, and like his consort, Seshat, she would not have necessarily been worshipped like Isis, but she was very important as she's the patron of architects, and she was the one that helped set the architecture and helped align the buildings to the stars. So there was a lot of gods that just did other jobs because the head gods couldn't do it all.
That's amazing. So they had the organized structures.
Yeah.
And it was a simplified
version. And that came down
through
the Greeks. You know, Zeus was the head god, but we had Hephaestus, who was the builder god, the worker god, and, you know, Jupiter and Neptune. Neptune was the water god.
Yes, I know, and I'm just wondering now with the, there's going to be a few that are going to be coming up right now with the discovery of more planets, and I was just thinking about the gods that haven't been named, the unnamed gods. That may be coming up right now.
They'll have to come up with that.
Wonderful. I mean, I had to ask that. And just as Mercury would wing Steve back in, he's back in the room.
Yeah, I am. I wanted to say thank you for covering for me, Carmen and Stephen. I lost my Skype connection, but thank you to you, Evans. I need to learn more and more from you, Evans, about Thoth, because Mercury's my number one planet in my chart. I have a very strong connection to Mercury. I'm a hermetic astrologer, hermetician,
right.
So I really want to learn more and more from you about Thoth. But before we end the interview, Evans, I mentioned your website, The Perpetual Pilgrim, but for our listeners who want to learn more, who want to find out about your work and hear from you regularly, how can they do that?
Well, they can go to my blog, The Perpetual Pilgrim, and I have put up a blog about Toth for this show with the pictures and a couple of references, and the blog post before was about Sekhmet. There is a contact, and then there's some resources there, and including who I recommend if somebody decides they really needed to meet Toth firsthand in Egypt. And I will be doing some more blog posts about the tarot. I'm teaching tarot classes, and so I'll be keeping up with that, and we now know that the tarot is Toth.
Wonderful. Well, Evans, absolute pleasure to have you with us again. Thank you for sharing everything you've given us this evening, and we wish you lots of luck with your work.
Well, thank you. I'm enjoying it. It's wonderful to be working with Toth.
Thank you, Evans. It's great to have you with us. Well, it was a great show. I'm sorry I got disconnected there, everybody. The wonders of Skype. I want to thank Evans again for joining us. I've got a lot of respect for her knowledge and her work, and I always follow her blog and learn a lot. Now, for those of you that want to be in contact with Evans, remember to visit her profile at Psychic Access Talk Radio. All of our guests on Psychic Access Talk Radio have a profile that you can review, and you can also listen to the archived shows. But Evans' website is the Perpetual Pilgrim.com. Now, do stay tuned for the rest of the show, but before we move on, I'd like to make a few announcements. And remember that you can get your free on-air reading with our gifted psychics later in this show. We'll announce the call-in number a little later on, so have your pen and paper ready. And if you were unable to catch last week's show, it was a wonderful show all about remote viewing with Lynn Buchanan. You'll find that archive link on our website, psychicaccesstalkradio.com. Just click on the archives tab and you'll see all of our other shows there as well. There are many there now, as we've been running this show for quite some time. And please feel free to circulate the archive links and future show details to your friends and family. We want to connect with as many people as possible, so share away. And if you'd like to read more about psychic work and metaphysics, the supernatural, paranormal, etc., please visit our website, psychicbloggers.com. There's a lot to learn there and some wonderful, wonderful information, all free of charge. And if you'd like a reading from the best professional psychics on the internet, go to psychicaccess.com. You'll find the best verified and accuracy-tested psychics, each offering their unique gifts. And they each have their own detailed profile so that you can find out more about them and choose the reader that you feel can most help you at the current time. It's a great honor to be with Psychic Access. I want to thank Doug for all his wonderful work keeping us on track there behind the scenes and keeping Psychic Access running so smoothly and with such high expectations. All of the co-hosts on the radio show are available at Psychic Access. If you would like a personal reading, just come and visit us there at psychicaccess.com. We'd love to hear from you. And if you have your own website, you can earn 50 cents a minute on reading referred through to Psychic Access from your site. So if you'd like to learn more about that great offer, look at psychicaccess.com/webmasters. And if you like our show, please invite your friends to join us in our chat room and to listen in to the Psychic Viewpoints. There's something for everybody, so spread the word. We appreciate it. Now, we're not going to take calls just yet. We'll let you know in a little while, but I'm going to give you the number so that you can dial in a little later on. It's 724-444-4851. That's 724-444-4851. Now, when we do start taking calls later on, please be clear with your question. We only take one question per caller so that we can connect with lots of people. So have your question ready and speak up clearly. And when you do call in, you will hear the radio show until you get through. We'll take calls in order. Well, let's move to that part of the show when we discuss the interview and share our thoughts. Stephen, I know you're somebody that's very passionate about history and literature. And
yes.
Mercury, what were your thoughts, or what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, I was just thinking that Thoth really, you know, among the many things he represents, it's our connection to the divine, our ability to get inspiration from the higher spheres. And for that reason, he's important. You know, he's very important. And when we see his symbols afflicted in an astrological figure, for example, then we can often really expect some sort of impediment to the person's ability to even cogitate, to even operate at the even most basic mental level if the impediment is severe enough. Or by conversely, a great facility, a great ease of connection with the divine could be indicated in the astrological chart. And so understanding the Thoth function, as it were, in psychology and in astrology, it can empower you to help people a great deal when it comes to communicating with loved ones. And also, you know, wouldn't we all like to have a nice meter that could tell whether somebody's lying to us? You know, Mercury's placement, you know, the symbols of Thoth in the birth chart or in any astrological figure, that's also a very strong indication of the honesty of someone's communication, of someone's ability to tell the truth or even perceive the truth. It's really fascinating stuff.
Have you been to Egypt, Stephen?
Yes, but only superficially. I've worked at sea in the cruise industry, and you know, if you're looking for an in-depth experience of a country, that's not the way to do it. So I was in the Mediterranean off the coast. I would love to go to Luxor, visit the temples, see some of the hieroglyphs that actually picture this ibis-headed god. You know, the ibis is a bird with a very long, thin beak. And you know, birds are just so prevalent in the symbology surrounding Hermes and Mercury and Thoth. And because birds, they are so fast, they represent thoughts themselves, you see. And there's something ruthless about birds, you know, just like there's something ruthless about raw knowledge. Raw data doesn't care whether you like it or not. Raw data doesn't care whether it fits into some delicate geopolitical reality. Raw data is raw data, and it's ruthless. Just like birds have a bit of ruthlessness about them in the way they go about feeding themselves. They're, you know, some great person, I can't remember who, said, if you look at a bird, it's always destroying life. And you know what? That's pretty much just about true.
Well, thank you, Stephen. I know you've traveled a lot, Carmen. Have you been to Egypt?
No, I have not. I used to live in Southern Africa. So that was just Northern Africa. It was a completely different world.
But do you see any similarities between this archetype of Thoth, of Hermes, Mercury, and traditions in Africa?
That's a very interesting question. And I would feel like the only, I don't know a lot, you know, unfortunately, a lot of the culture was scattered in where I lived, in the regions that I lived in. So what tribes became known as the Bantu, and they became amalgamated into a group of sort of nondescript Africans, and they lost their identity, and then they reestablished their identities again. Just recently, and so now they're bringing out a lot of that tribal lore. I'm not very familiar with it. It's a very different, possibly, society, but I do know that what I was looking at, and my mind was wandering because I was thinking of the history of Egypt. So I segued back all the way back to, well, to answer your question, it's possible it could have crept into or have fed into the Roman, into the Zulu culture, because the Zulu people, which is the Southern African, one of the most dominant tribes there, had Zulu influences, Roman language, in their numbers, Roman numbers. So the Romans came into Africa as opposed to the Egyptians, which I think was interesting. So they went all the way south. And then I was thinking about, okay, so we had Egypt. And if you looked at this map, which I was just refreshing my mind on, what I was thinking was the origins of gods, right? So you have this central part of Mesopotamia, Sumeria, Assyria, and Babylon, which were really the head of Northern Africa and really were pretty much where we as a human race, not as a race, but in the central European races began. And then they would have moved all the way south. But it would have actually, there would have been a little small uptick north, where there was an interesting little fight over the area by the Hittites. These Hittites were the most obscure little group of people that actually managed huge swaths of areas and war lands by delegation. And I understand, I was just talking with Stephen in the chat room about this, that they were not necessarily renowned for being the most aggressive or the most dominant. But, you know, Stephen, how I remember them, and Steve, how I remember them is that from the stories I've seen is that they were very good at integrating everybody's gods. So what they would do was a lot of these gods may have actually have filtered through the Hittites, you know, up through the Hittites, and being, because Syria would have been in the middle, and Syria was always disputed all the way back. It's unfortunate. And you would have had some gods going into, you know, the Russian areas, and we would have Eastern European and Asia, and some of them going south into Egypt, and others yet going through the Roman channels. I just find it fascinating, and I'm just in my mind trying to bring this together. Now, can you imagine what the Hittites did? What they did was, apart from putting together these treaties with the Egyptians from much further north and from a smaller base, they were actually, they took, I think, over 10,000 gods and amalgamated them and wrote them all in their books in cuneiform, or books, I mean, on slabs of rock. So, in fact, they categorized most of the gods that would have come from Greece and Mesopotamia, the origins of these recordings. And I don't know what happened when it came. I think that one cannot really say that South Africa was necessarily very influenced by it. That was possibly a completely different place of, or I want to say the German word Ursprung, or origin of race, but not sure how that works. But yeah, I find that just so fascinating.
There's a tribe, isn't there, in the Dogon tribe in Africa. You guys probably have heard of the Dogon tribe, and they drew... Yes, Dogon. It's Central Africa somewhere, Dogon tribe. Yeah. And they drew Sirius, and they just drew information on a wall that they could not have had at the time. It wasn't known, and it must have been channeled or given to them by an extraterrestrial source. Have you heard of that, Stephen?
I absolutely have. In fact, the Dogon tribe were in possession of like mathematically precise data about the planet Uranus before, well in advance of a conventional science. And this bothered conventional science. They wanted to know why in the Sam Hill this tribe of, to their eyes, primitives, could have such a repository of knowledge about Uranus. And they polled the elders of this tribe, and the elders of this tribe outlined a story that would have made L. Ron Hubbard blush with pride. But it was a very compelling story, way more compelling than the mythologies or the, you know, cosmologies of some of these the more modern religions that are gaining traction among the people these days. And I can't remember chapter and verse what their cosmology is, but it revolves very strongly around the planet Uranus, and they're convinced that they have had regular visitations with the Uranians in their history. And that they received specialized knowledge on where to locate their tribe in the incredibly hostile environment of Africa. And guess what? Lots of other tribes fell by the wayside. The Dogon just so happened to locate themselves in precisely the most beneficial spot in what is otherwise an inhospitable environment. So a fascinating tribe of people.
It's interesting, isn't it? We think in the West that we know it all. I know that we didn't talk particularly about the planets, and well, we talked a little about Mercury, but I know I've been studying the moon's nodes, the north and south node of the moon in different charts, and yes. Find that really, really fascinating. And I just think that, you know, in times gone by when people really lived with nature, they were more connected to the significance of the planets,
sure,
and oral
sure.
oral traditions as well.
Absolutely. They didn't have an Xbox to distract them. Why go outside and stare up at a sky that you probably can't see anyway because of all the light pollution when you have an Xbox inside? You know, these people, you know, they were very much more invested in their nature, in their environment than we are. You know, they were at the whim of their environment. They were sort of caught in these grinding gears of their ecology. And in order to remain on top of the food chain, they had to be observant. And by this process of observing, they were like, hey, these bright spots are moving. They're in different spots. And when they reach a certain spot, then, you know, edible stuff grows out of the ground. You know, they started making these connections. And eventually, that practice has led to such things as psychological astrology, which links the planets to various functions of the ego. And, you know, it's from such small particles, big clouds condense, Stephen King said one time in one of his books. And that's generally true. Generally true.
Fascinating. Well, I know you love to read.
Yeah, man, I'm definitely a child of Thoth because I love that divine communion of literature, a body of knowledge that has been left to me, my inheritance of hundreds of years of human experience and knowledge. I wallow in that. It's addicting.
And how about you, Carmen? Do you like to read?
You know, I probably read more nonfiction than fiction now, and yeah, and if I can get the time, I probably am more into current events and research right now. But I love psychology, and I have to finish off a book by Skinner, you know, behavioral psychology, and then I feel like I can start something new. I have that one a little bit in a suspension right now, but I've read, you know, yes, hundreds of books, of course, and all the classics, but... You know, I would say that, you know, back to the UFO lore, can I tell you guys, I don't know if it was just brilliant suppression or if we just didn't have them in Southern Africa. Because, you know, no one really spoke about it there, and we spoke to a lot of local people, and they never ever mentioned, you know, anything like that.
They didn't mention UFOs?
No, not really. No. And you know that you know those the people there are very open. They would say something, definitely. So I think that was quite interesting, and just threading that all together. So I wonder if those are just regions where they appear, you know, sort of around the equatorial belt, like the migrations. Just fascinating. And in terms of reading and history, it's something I should have studied. But I'm always watching documentaries. And reading the news, and I think then, you know, thank God for links.
For links? Together. What is that?
No, I just link my way around the internet. I love it. It's very intelligent, isn't it? It teaches you.
Oh, you mean the links from one site to another?
Yes. Oh, no, not the magical links. But in the essence of, like, the animals, I'm trying to think about any of the African folklore that I remember. Let me tell you, it was probably more geometric. Probably more mask art, basic probably animals that like impala or antelope for hunting. Very, very not a lot of symbolism and more design. So in terms of being able to see what the gods were, I felt it was more like animism and mask kind of than having gods. So the African religion is a bit more unique in that way, in that it doesn't actually worship necessarily humans, but animals. You know what I mean?
I do. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's fascinating, isn't it? It would be wonderful just to travel around the world and ask different people, different cultures, different elders, what they know, and just to have all of that exposure and information. It's wonderful. Well, thank you, Carmen. Well, we're going to take our first call. Before we do, I'll just give the number out again to everybody. It's 724-444-4851. That's 724-444-4851. And this first call is from Louisiana. And for you, Stephen.
Thank you very much. Hello, who am I speaking with in Louisiana?
My name is Kelly.
Hi, Kelly. Thank you for calling Psychic Viewpoint. How may I help you?
I'm just wondering. I've been in and out relationship. I'm just wondering, do you guys see anyone else in my future?
Okay, one second. Is there anyone else? Will there be anyone else Kelly's future. One second while I pick up on your romantic future, please, Kelly. Well, the good news is that definitely there's going to be somebody in your future, but you might be in for a bit of a wait, do you see? I think there are going to be some karmic lessons that you might have to confront before you start getting some better results in your love life. So first thing I can tell you is that the next couple of months, there's not going to be much in the way of romance, but there will be. It'll be more in the line of communication. Do you see bridges perhaps that you thought were burnt? You might be able to reestablish links. The Six of Swords specifically indicates more of a mental type of connection with men instead of an affectionate or an emotional type of connection. Now, this is just going over the next couple of months, but the Eight of Swords also indicates that there's probably going to be some trouble too. So by the same token, there will be some romance within the next several months, but also maybe not complete satisfaction. There might be something, you know, wrong with the guy after some time, or, you know, maybe you know, he turns out to be not as satisfying or as fun to be with as he was before. So it'll be a situation where you might have to go back to the drawing board and start over again. And what's going on is that your stamina, your endurance is being tested by the universe. It's being strengthened, sort of like an army recruit going to basic training will have to do push-ups and sit-ups and suffer before he starts gaining mass and muscle. So, you know, take heart when these challenges start coming to you. You know, look at them, you know, tackle them with the appropriate attitude, their resistance to make me stronger, and you'll definitely overcome them and start attracting higher quality romantic partners to you. Okay, Kelly? But you're going to have your romantic plate going to be kind of full over the next several months there. I will say that.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Yes, ma'am. Well, thank you for listening, and come visit us at psychicaccess.com, okay?
Will do. Have a good night.
Yes, ma'am. You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Stephen. Next one's for you, Carmen, and this is a call from Florida.
Hello, Florida. Hello.
Hello?
Carmen speaking.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, I'm Jacqueline.
Nice to meet you.
I'm wondering about my career situation. I have a feeling I'm going to be let go, but do you see better things in my future?
Okay, you know what? I'm going to see a lot about your present situation, which is where I want to make sure this is the right reading for you. Let me see what I can glean for you. You're so bright and optimistic about that. How do you manage? Are you happy to be leaving your job?
I'm sorry?
You must be happy to be leaving your job. You sound quite optimistic about this decision.
I would be very happy to leave my job. I haven't been happy for the almost 5 years I've been in it, but I'm glad that my former supervisor is not anymore my supervisor. She's gone, but I'm still not happy.
And you have, it says here, it's either you're working with someone who has children or you have a child. It says here, there says here, painful intellectual work. And then it says here, it's sort of stopped. I'm seeing sort of what you're doing here. I don't know how much, it's since there's a new person that's come in that kind of blocked some of your avenues out, I can see how difficult it would be for you to organize anything within this particular organization at this point. So I'm going to have a look here at the future on this one. You still have some contracts or something to work through. So it's like saying, actually, you're not going to be let go right away. And then that's like saying, okay, that's the truth. It's probably not happening right now. And let's see. It says here they need you. So it's not a foregone conclusion. And I don't know if that's good or bad news, but don't let that faze you for looking for new work. Because it does say here, in your particular field, it says here, there's an extreme, like they're going to be looking for people to train in your particular area. You need to be out teaching whatever you do. What do you do?
I'm in sales. I'm in medical sales.
Okay. Do you think they could be putting you into a managing position? That's possible.
I would never have expected that, but that would be great.
I think your next job might actually be that. You might have to work as a supervisor.
Okay.
So that would be my first clue. I mean, it's never like, oh, it's great, it's a new job. It's actually telling you what the job is. And so I'm thinking that's a yes. And so that would be quite good. And it says here there's going to be no details for some time from your boss about this change. So it's up to you. They're allowing you a lot of time to get this going. And so in a way they need you, but they're going to allow you to look for work first. And then they may not want you to go. So I know that this isn't quite straightforward, but, you know, I urge you to call us as well. And I'm, like, saying this is good and bad because I know it can be demotivating if you're not released from something. But clearly I don't see them actually letting go of you right now. Just don't know why, but and I trust that feeling, okay?
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks good luck, much. Okay? That's a good one. Take good care.
Thank you. You too. Thank you. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thank you, Carmen. The next call is from Alaska, and I'll take this one. Who's calling?
Hi.
Hi, what's your name?
My name is Delia.
Hello, Delia. How are you?
I'm not doing so good. That's why I'm calling. But other than that, I'm still blessed to be alive.
Well, I'm sorry to hear you're not feeling good, Delia. How can we help you?
These three guys stole my car. And people keep stealing from me, and I don't bother nobody, but every time I turn around, I keep getting blamed for stuff, and I don't know why I'm a target for the living and the dead. Let's put it like that.
Okay, so you feel you're had something, a string of bad luck generally?
Yeah, but my last name is Fortune, and apparently right now it's not going that way.
Okay. Okay, let me see.
They sold it last Thursday.
Okay. Let's have a look. Well, I feel like things are going to turn around for you, to be honest. And I'm not just saying that to make you feel good. I'm telling you that because that's what I actually see. I feel like the situation's going to improve for you as we get into the springtime. But I feel very drawn to May. And I feel that in May, your situation turns around and that you have some much better luck in May. I have to say to you, I feel like you might move, though. Have you considered moving?
No, I'm looking for a place to move back in Eagle River where I came from.
Okay,
right now,
okay.
Staying at is I'm scared to stay here.
Yeah, I feel like you will move, you see. And you're not in the right spot, but I feel that you will move, and things will happen very suddenly for you. I don't really feel that you'll have solid plans in place, but all of a sudden everything will shift, and it does feel like May time. And I feel like your circumstances just improve generally for you, that you will be in a much better environment, that life will be easier for you. I feel that you'll be much more comfortable as well in that environment. And I feel that you'll be closer to people that are supportive of you. So I honestly feel like the situation's going to improve. I can imagine it's stressful. I mean, you've had your car stolen and you're having this run of bad luck. But I do feel it will shift for you. Do you think it's feasible you would move in May or in the springtime?
Well, the place where I'm staying at now, they're changing the management and the way rent is being paid. And so that's when I was going to leave and go back to Eagle River because I don't like it where I'm at. And those guys that were watching me, they took my car because I found out that they had been watching me a while. And I don't know why they were watching me. And so I do want to leave where I'm at because I'm going back and forth. Because everything got stolen from my house before. What I'm saying is that whatever it is, it's following me. It's causing people to hate me and want to fight with me and do bad things to me. It's something following me that's real bad.
Well, have you done any cleansing rituals? Have you smudged your home? Have you meditated? Have you tried to do things to uplift yourself?
I do buy a suit of sage and olive oil and holy water, but the meditating part I can't do even when they told me to try to do it sitting up, because I get so tired that I don't sleep good at night, and so I fall asleep wherever I'm at, because I don't want to sound funny, but you guys should understand, the ghosts keep messing with me, and they talk too much. They know that I can hear and see them, and they just talk and talk and talk and talk, and then they mess with my food.
And I have have you told your guides that that's not acceptable?
Well, I told them to stop doing that, but they keep bothering me because they know I can hear them and see them, and I'm tired of them too. I'm tired of all of them. Right now, I just need peace. I don't have any peace because they're right there. Everywhere I go, sitting on the couch, in the shower, in my bed, just bothering me. Oh, I'm tired of them. I know I'm supposed to help them in one way or another once I develop everything as a guider of lost souls. But right now, I'm so tired of all the things that are going on around me that I just can't help them.
Yeah, it sounds like you've really got to put yourself first. You need to really tell your guides that you don't want to be disturbed. You know, and in all honesty, I remember when I was about 14 saying to my main guide, look, I don't want to be disturbed anymore. I don't want to be woken up in the night and have people giving me the information. I want to get my sleep. I need to go to school and study and be productive. And you need to be very assertive with your guides when you do, before you go to sleep and you pray and you say, I don't want to be constantly switched on and available to spirit. I will be prepared to do some spiritual work, but only if this is something that can be managed and I choose to be in control of it. I really feel like you need to do that. The other thing that does make a difference, which is challenging when you've got such stressful circumstances, and I feel it will improve for sure in the spring, but doing all the things you can do just to make yourself feel good, when our energy is high, when we feel good about ourselves and about life, and we can take pleasure from things, even if it's little things, then it makes it more difficult for us to be interrupted energetically and spiritually. So you need to do that. But I do feel for you, and I'll be thinking of you. But hang on, the situation will improve in the springtime.
I'm glad that you told me that. Do you know what type of job am I supposed to have? Because it looks like every time I get a job, people think I don't belong in that job, and then they cause me a problem. Or they get mad and want to try to do something to me, and I did nothing to them. The type of occupation is what I'm asking.
Yeah. I honestly, my gut feel is that you're really good with people, but caring for people, assisting people. I don't really feel that you would thrive in a corporate environment or an office environment. So, I feel things will shift for you in the springtime. We'd need to, I'd want to have a good look at your astrological chart to say exactly what I feel you should be doing for a living. But one of the things you can do is you can look at your chart online, and, well, actually, you'd need to look at the power of each of the different planets. If you can, call myself or Stephen, and we both have good astrology software, and we can take a good look at the power of the planets in your chart and really advise you strongly on what would be the best path for you professionally. So that's either myself, Steve, or Stephen on Psychic Access. We can look that up for you, and you can get 6 minutes for free, and that's enough for us to take a quick look at your chart and tell you what we feel would be the best path. Okay?
Oh, okay. Your name again, please.
I'm Steve, and Stephen is an astrologer as well. Carmen could help you, but Stephen's an astrologer, and I feel that we need to look at your chart and see which are your best planets, which are the best parts of your chart, where you would be most easily successful career-wise, okay?
Okay, and I'll do that then. So I'll just get on the internet and look it up?
Yeah, you can call Stephen or myself on Psychic Access, because if you register, you get 6 minutes free anyway, and that's enough time for us to take a quick look at your chart. Make sure when you call that you do have your time of birth, place of birth, and date of birth, and we'll check that for you, okay? And we wish you lots of luck.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Have a nice evening.
Good luck. Thank you for calling. Okay, next call is for Stephen. This one's from New York. Stephen.
Thank you very much. And hello. Who am I speaking with in New York?
Anne.
Hi, Anne.
Hi.
How may I help you?
So I called last week. I think I spoke to Maureen, but I was speaking about this friend from high school who I felt like he didn't want to communicate with me because I was intruding upon his life, and I was told that I can contact him, and so I wrote him on Facebook. I wrote him a private message, and Facebook told me that he saw it, so I just want to make sure what his reaction was to that.
Okay. Well, let's see how that affected him. Okay. One second while I pick up on this gentleman.
Okay.
Well, the Nine of Scepters indicates what he's thinking. That shows what his thoughts are. The number nine, the numerology of it, is really all about enlightenment. You know, so I would say right off the bat, in some way, his thoughts are geared towards saying, that's enlightening. So seeing that must have made some sort of a light bulb click for him somehow in order to have this card. That's what the general thoughts are. Now,
I'm sorry, I didn't understand that. Can you say that again? What's enlightening? Yeah.
Well, whatever.
I mean, what do you mean? What do you? Just say that again, please.
Yes. Well, the Nine of Scepters is describing his thoughts regarding you right now, and it's a card of enlightenment, a card of illumination. So it tells me that he must have come in. It's like a light bulb clicked in his head or something. He's come to some sort of a realization. As to what specifically the realization is, that I can only speculate. But what I'm telling you is that his thoughts, when they are pertaining to you, are like he's found some sort of a new information and he's going to act on it, or some sort of confirmation. It's not like you had to tell him anything. It's like he witnessed something and it confirmed something for him or made him think of some idea. That's what it means by enlightenment or illumination, do you see? And
okay, go ahead.
Well, I'm saying this is going to affect him in a very positive way, because what I'm seeing from his desires and his emotions are they're all tied in with ideas of domesticity and affection. So I would expect his thoughts actually to be, you know, quite positive. Now, affectionate meaning, you know, high regard. I don't see anything, you know, certainly negative there, even though he might, you know, who knows how he might act. But I'm telling you right now, I don't see anything, you know, negative going on there. In fact, I expect his behavior going forward to seem a little bit enthusiastic, you know, about you. So, I mean, it's all positive. I would have expected, even though, you know, you might not think so, I do believe that ultimately it's going to affect him and make in a positive way and make him have more regard for you.
Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Stephen. Next call is from Missouri for Carmen.
Oh, well, hi. We have someone from Missouri. That's an exotic location for me. Hello.
Hello.
Hi. What's your name?
Hello. I would like to know if I will get into dental school this year or this application cycle. Or will I have to wait until next application cycle?
Oh, okay. Are you trying to get into... okay. Let me have a look here for you. Can I ask specifically what you're studying?
Biology.
Cool. Let me have a look here. Unless this isn't a very, like, thunderous kind of version of biology that I don't know about, if it's, like, something that you're doing. Biology to me seems quiet and somewhat cellular, forming over time, generations. And this comes up to say that right now what you have is quite a shakeup in that particular university. And I would recommend that you probably apply next year, because it's exhausting. And I just feel it does, one of the things that does come up, you're in Missouri, and it's like not, it says here, this particular university is possibly, unless you're going into, you're not going into genetics, are you?
No, I'm going into dentistry.
Okay. So what this is telling me here is, that would
I'm actually in Atlanta for school, but okay. This is a Missouri number.
That oh, you're going sense. To Atlanta. Okay. So what this is telling me here is possibly too soon, too much, too quick, too chaotic, and probably a change of ownership for that particular organization or college. And then that's where I would feel like there was this shakeup coming up. And it says here, to be balanced out. But it seems to me like there are a few things you need to do to get there. They're going to ask for requirements, and then they're going to really filter you. They're going to bring you in very quickly. So it's almost like you have to jump through a lot to get there, and then they let you in, and then you have to get through this. So it's like saying, then you have to get through the move. I almost feel like it could be more comfortable for you to go next year. Now, the one thing I'll tell you from experience is there's a lot of people right now studying, hey? So you probably want to get into the market pretty much now, because a lot of people are going to be graduating over the next few years. You're in a good industry. It does say here, though, that that particular college may be problematic. And that's, I think, what I'm picking up. So do you have another option in mind? Why Atlanta?
Actually, I'm in school right now. I'm actually finishing up my senior year at Spelman. And I'm probably either going to go to Meharry, which is in Tennessee, or Howard, which is in D.C.
Okay. So what I'm seeing here is, I mean, you have to make a decision, and apparently it hasn't been formed yet. It could be a little bit too tight for you in terms of decision-making. I would say I would give you a generous bit, like I would give you the generous allowance to abstain for a year. Make up your mind. Okay. Do it slowly. It's not an industry that's going to be drained, because it's a very tough industry, too, to maintain, to get good work in. I mean, you have to be good at what you do. So it's all right, but I'm just saying here, for some reason, it just doesn't look like it's going to go into sync that quickly. I would say take it easy for some reason. That's all I can say. I don't know if that's bad for you. Your finances look okay. Okay?
Okay.
Okay, well, best to you, right? Good luck, okay?
All right. Uh-huh. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, so our next caller.
Thank you, Carmen.
Yeah.
Well, we've got a caller just right now. Let's see. No, we haven't got a caller just at the moment, so we'll talk a little bit more. I've got a question for both of you, actually, so just chime in however you like. I want to ask you how you prefer to give readings, and based upon the different metaphysical studies you've done, which are your favorite tools? I'm sure you're going to say tarot, but as well. But I'm interested to just see, I'm interested to have a discussion about different types of readings, because a lot of clients have a particular expectation about how a reading should be done. And then I'm interested to ask you guys how you like to read, and which guidelines you work by, which tools you like to use, etc.
Well, my reading sessions, when they're really good, it's like a brainstorming. You know, what I do is I like to blend the numerology and the astrology behind the card. All the cards in my deck, I use the Brotherhood of Light Egyptian Tarot, which is among the most powerful decks that I've ever used. All those cards are rooted to some sort of astrological principle, be it a planet or a sign. And, you know, layering the reading with this extra information uniformly produces a good result. That's the bulk of my method with the tarot. Of course, the tarot asks the question and gets the answer from the astral planes. And part of my job is sorting out what it lays in front of me. And the numerology and the astrology help me to do that, because they help me to understand the underlying vibratory structures that the cards are trying to describe.
Goodness me, that's a good answer, Stephen.
It is. It's the right answer. The right answer is always the good answer. When you have the right answer, you can just relax because it's always a good one.
And Carmen, what about you?
I'm organic. I think I sing with the tarot. To me, I put together a chaotic reading. I go through several decks in an hour. I'll definitely work as many. I don't even use a spread. It's disorganized. I have to use my memory. I have to remember, and I don't have any kind of. It is probably quite organic. But then I would say the latest thing I have a lot of fun with is just nature. And I'm very interested in mathematics and number combinations.
I want to study math again.
Me too.
I really do.
I didn't know it could be so useful and so fun. If I'd known it was magic. Amazing. If I'd known it was magic, I would have. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I really do want to study math again. My challenge, Carmen, is that I'm always doing too much, and I have to really be sure that I focus clearly on actually getting a reasonable number of things actually done or completed. So I think I'll probably turn more to math next year, but incredible code. There is actually another call.
Oh, good.
Yeah, we've got a call from Georgia, and this one's for me. So who's calling? Oh, no, it's actually New York, apparently. New York, who's calling? Do we have a caller from New York? Hello, New York, are you there?
Okay, but you know what I'm freaking out about, Steve? It's like you don't even need a deck of cards these days. All you need to do is study the news, a bit of astronomy, have a look outside the window, and then you realize, you know, you're interacting with the universe. There's this huge, giant maw of like, almost like the gods are in the heavens. And finally, through Hubble, we can see them. It's awe-inspiring and frightening. And I think if one had to take one study into, you know, into that, one would probably find all the answers one needed ad infinitum.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure the answers are all out there. Well, actually, we do have a call from California. Who's calling from California?
Hello?
Hi, what's your name?
Hi, my name's Adriana.
Adriana, how are you?
Hi, fine.
Good. What's your question, Adriana?
I want to see if you can focus, like, on relationships and tell me what you see happening between me and somebody.
Okay, let's see. Well, I actually feel like you're going to have a choice, Adriana. I know that you're a more introverted than extroverted person, and I feel like you're also somebody that loves knowledge, that loves searching for truth and answers, information. You've got a real, real keen interest in spirituality as well. And I can see the romantic interest, the recent romantic interest. I'm drawn back about 5 or 6 months. But I feel that you really need to keep a balanced perspective and not rush in here, not set too many expectations. Stay open-minded because I see you having a choice. I don't feel it's immediate, but I do feel that there's another person that you meet later this year. It feels like the fall. I'm drawn to October. So I don't want to say to you, oh, yes, this is it, or no, it's not. I feel like you need to wait and see and bear in mind that although this has taken a while to come about, there is there are a couple of options for you in future. And I know that you will be very happily settled and very successful and very much loved and in love in future. My strong feeling is just don't rush it. Just take time. Because you're not aware at this stage of the options that are available to you.
Okay, I'm a bit confused. So are you giving me a reading of who I'm going to meet or about the person that I was asking about?
I'm the person that you're asking about, I don't feel is the only person on the horizon for you. That's what I'm saying to you.
Okay, but so then as far as for me and him, you don't see anything happening?
I feel it's possible, but I don't feel it's going to be, I don't feel it's imminent. And I don't feel that you should rush or push the situation. I feel like you need to relax and wait and see. But I do feel very strongly that you will have to make a choice, but it feels late, like later this year. I know from what I'm seeing that things will work out well for you, that you'll be loved and in love, as I said, and very happy and settled. I feel very confident that you'll start a family. But I don't feel that you should rush into this situation or have your heart set only upon this person, because I feel later in the year the situation becomes clear. But again, I feel at that point in time you'll have to make a choice
between a new person and this person.
Yes.
Now?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And I'm drawn to October.
That's what I'm drawn to. Yes.
Okay. Okay, well, yeah, well, I just wanted to ask about that person. But, okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Okay, so we have a call for you, Stephen, from Georgia.
Thank you very much, Steve. Well, hello, Georgia. Who am I speaking with?
Hi, this is Kathy.
Hi, Kathy. How can I help you tonight?
I needed you to look at my job situation. I started a consulting job, and I'm trying to see if my term with the client will be extended.
Okay, well, let's just start with that question. Will Kathy's term with the client be extended? Will Kathy's term with the client be extended? 1 second while we get the answer to that question, okay? Wow. Well, you know, I'm getting a yes answer all across the board there, Kathy. The answer to that question is indeed yes. Your term with the client will be extended. In fact, looking at the what is essentially a timeline here, is your client a prince? Is he a male? Are there any males involved in this deal?
Yes, and the reason I hesitate is I work for one company and then they send me out to another company. So the company I truly work for, I deal with a male. The company that I'm consulting with, I deal more with a woman. So that's why
okay.
I hesitated.
Okay, awesome. Well, the reason I brought that up is because the period of time right now is the male is going to be important somehow. The reversed queen of scepters. The reversed queen indicates a male. That's why I'm harping on the male aspect here. But the thing to remember is that this gentleman, you know, is going to be associated with the sign of Leo. So he's going to want to be made to feel important. That's going to help you in your dealings with the guy. But he's just going to somehow loom in this. Somehow, the card is showing up, so he's going to be an important factor in this. But moving forward, what interests me more is the Two of Cups. The number two, the numerology of it, is all about partnership. And it's, you know, aside from the fact that the overall answer to the question is yes, this Two of Cups is just a further sort of testimony that things are going to conclude the way that you want to. Now, the card is reversed, and my judgment on that is that this is actually going to represent the start of what will probably be a lucrative association. So not only will this contract come to terms, or you know, whatever business jargon you use to describe it, not only will this contract come to fruition with this client, but I would certainly expect other future dealings with the client also to bear fruit for your company and you personally, okay?
Oh, perfect, because I'm trying to be a long-time consultant, so that works well for me, because I just want to go from company to company.
You're going to be able to do that. I mean, you're going to fit in very well in this industry, and if your design is to have a permanent spot at the table, so to speak, I don't see any impediments to that at all. I don't see anything here that would contradict success in your endeavors. And you know, I would say so if it were the contrary. I have no qualms about that.
Perfect. Thank you. This has been a long waited. It's less stress, and I have a lot of flexibility.
Well, that's it's going to be paying off for you, because I'm pretty sure that that flexibility is going to be called upon, because you know, some of the cards in the future have to deal with the sign of Sagittarius. So that makes me want to ask you, oh my goodness, is there going to be any traveling involved, you know, with this client, for example? You know, it could be a situation where you're, you know, traveling to meet the client for lunch, or to the client's office space, to, you know, so there's going to be a lot of sort of running around. So it's a good thing, I would say. And of course, Sagittarius is all about higher education. And so this is really what your future moments with this company are going to be about. You're sort of entering the university of consultancy. You know, does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And you touched on education, and I need to get back on studying for my CP exam. So that's another nudge for me to get back.
Oh, wow. Well, I mean, you know, I'm excited for your future. You got some adventurous days ahead of you, and a lot of satisfaction with your career path. You're going to be successful. You're on the right track, and I wish you well in your endeavors.
Thank you. I appreciate your reading.
Yes, ma'am. Well, thank you for calling us, and come visit us at psychicaccess.com.
Great. Have a nice night. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Stephen. Good stuff. Well, it was a great show. I loved the interview with Evan. She's just got so much information to share. And Egypt's an area that I really need to research a lot more. There's just so much to uncover metaphysically. It's never ending.
I know. Have you been? No, you haven't, which is why
you haven't
asked me.
I haven't, but I would love to go. Not right now, but I would love to go in future, at some stage in the future. But whose show is it next week? Yours was last week, Carmen. It was a great show. Is next week you, Stephen?
Yes. Next week I will have Phil Lang. He is a practitioner of a very rare form of Asian alchemy called the Kunlun system. We've touched on this topic before, but you know, it's something that fascinates me simply because of the alchemical procedures behind it. And really, Phil has some amazing stories about actual transformations people undergo as they do this sort of energy work. So I'm excited to explore this with Phil Lang next week, next Thursday.
Great. Sounds fantastic, Stephen. Well, I want to just remind everybody that they can get access to the show archive at psychicaccesstalkradio.com, as well as all of our other show archives. Brings us to the end of another great show. I want to thank Doug for everything he does behind the scenes as our executive producer. We'll have more in back next week, I think. And we'll be looking forward to your show, Stephen. So I'm going to say goodbye to everybody. Hope you all have a wonderful weekend, and then hand over to Carmen first and then Stephen to say goodbye.
Well, that's me. Well, thank you very much. Goodbye. And good night to you, and sweet dreams of Toth, or whatever his name is.
Good night, everyone. See you next week.
Hello. My name is Res Miranda. If you're having relationship, career, or life issues, I'm inviting you to experience what it's like to have access to professional, highly accurate psychics and spiritual advisors you can trust to care and help you. Register now to get your free 6-minute reading by telephone or chat. Get answers. Get access. Psychic access. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. PsychicAccess.com.